This is The Record on listener-supported KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. It's been called the hardest rock climb in the world, the Dawn Wall of El Capitan in Yosemite National Park, more than half a mile straight up. 2 years ago, Tommy Caldwell became the first person to free climb that wall. He did it without any climbing equipment, just his arms and legs and a rope around his waist for when, not if, but for when he falls.
It has this incredible and sometimes unnerving feeling of exposure. And you're living in this vertical world. You can't walk. You're always either grasping onto these tiny little nubbins on the rock, or you're hanging from your ropes. It's windy. It's sometimes cold. It's a very hostile environment.
And that is not the most hostile environment that Tommy's been in. Far from it. For his 21st birthday, he went climbing in Kyrgyzstan, where he and his climbing partners were captured by rebels.
We were climbing in this area that was 50 miles from the nearest road. It was very remote. We thought it would be a safe place to go climbing. But in the year of 2000, it became kind of an opium trade trail. And essentially this rebel group, Al-Qaeda affiliated, this was pre-9/11, so nobody in the U.S. really had heard the word Al-Qaeda at this point, or not very few people had. They moved over these mountain passes from one side. The Kyrgyz military came up from the other side, and a war broke out. We got captured by these rebels, held captive for 6 days.
Why were they holding you captive?
We were valuable. You know, we're Americans. They could have ransomed us. We were sort of being used as human shields. We're in the middle of this war. We were being shot at. They were being shot at. And the shooting was less aggressive because they didn't want to, you know, shoot the American captives.
Right.
And yeah, so we were just very useful in a situation like that.
So what was your captivity like with them? What was going on? Were they moving you around? How were they treating you?
Yeah, so the war broke out and we had to very quickly abandon everything. We had no food, neither did our captors. We had very little water. We would just come across it occasionally. During daylight hours, we would bury ourselves in little holes in the ground, cover ourselves up with brush, hide very quietly. And then at night, we would sneak around from one location to the next.
What was that like?
It was scary in a sort of way that still seems surreal to me at this point. It was one of these experiences that's so just different than anything else I had experienced, so painful that honestly I'm still trying to wrap my head around it.
Painful, physically painful.
Yeah,
besides scary.
Yeah, we were starving. We all, you know, all the four members of our expedition each lost nearly 20 pounds each. We were on the verge of hypothermia in the high mountains, and we thought we could be killed at any moment.
When did you figure out you had to do something more?
So for these 6 days, the other two male members of the expedition were very much like, we need to take matters into our own hands. Our best chance for surviving this is to escape, and that is going to mean overpowering our captors.
You're talking in English, and they're not understanding you or hearing you?
Yeah, right. We would just change the inflection in our voice. We would talk very frankly about killing these people right in front of them, but we would do it in a way that they didn't understand what we were saying.
Okay.
So I was in the other camp, and so was my girlfriend who was along on the trip with me, Beth Rodden. We were kind of split in two different camps. I thought that we should just wait it out.
When you say the other camp, you mean the other mindset of, like, what's the best or least worst plan?
Yeah, right. Yeah, two different mindsets, exactly. And so I was under the impression that we should wait it out. But as the situation got increasingly dire, I started to realize that we just couldn't wait it out. On our sixth night, we were high on this mountainside with just one remaining captor. It seemed like a storm was rolling in. We were already on the verge of hypothermia. We hadn't eaten in 6 days. And it was painfully obvious to me that this was going to be our chance to escape. Like, we were climbers. We were on a mountainside. We were very comfortable in this environment. Our captor was not. And so the act of, you know, the physical act of going up and actually pulling this guy over the edge was actually not that hard. It was just sort of the mental battle that went into it ahead of time. Like, should we do this? And I waited till the last possible moment. We were just about to top out the mountainside and the opportunity would have been over in just, you know, in just seconds. So I waited to the very last moment, and then I ended up taking matters into my own hands, which has, you know, sort of haunted me in ways ever since. And part of the reason that I wrote this book was to sort of grapple with that and understand what it meant.
I gotta know, what was it like to throw this guy over a mountain?
Yeah, so I had been waiting for the other two guys to do it because they wanted to. I didn't.
Yeah.
But it's hard to come to that place where you're willing to do it. It's just for whatever reason, it's just really hard to make it happen in the end. And so I realized they weren't going to do it at some point. I looked at my girlfriend and I was like, are you okay if I do this? Because she was adamantly against it too until this last moment when she realized this was our only chance. And in that moment, she didn't say anything, which to me was her blessing. And so I just kind of ran across this ledge in the middle of the night. It was dark under, you know, a relatively full moon. And I grabbed his gun strap and I just pulled him over backwards and watched him fall out of sight. It was incredibly surreal. For a moment, I was just kind of numb, I guess. And then I scrambled to the top of the mountain to where there was a flatter space. And I sat down and I just broke down. I mean, I write very vividly of this moment. I'd kind of blocked it out of my memory for a lot of years. But when I sat down to write this book, these were the first words I put in there. And I talk about sort of the surreal nature of the moment and how, you know, all the emotions came crashing down on me in an instant. And that's a very intense scene.
Before we leave that mountain, I take it you don't know what happened to your captor? You saw him disappear?
We do, actually.
Oh?
So we figured we had killed him. A reporter contacted us about 3 months later when we were back home and told us that he had been found in prison in Kyrgyzstan and that he actually lived. And at first, I couldn't believe it. None of us could. We're like, this is a ploy. I don't know why this reporter is saying these things. But we found out that it was true. And the two other members of the expedition actually went to Kyrgyzstan, ended up getting permission to talk to him in prison. Dateline did a big piece on the thing. There's a whole nother story behind that.
Wow. I'm talking to Tommy Caldwell, a climber who was captured by Al-Qaeda in 2000, and then 15 years later, he'd become the first person to free climb the Dawn Wall of El Capitan in Yosemite National Park. I sure remember when that happened.
Yeah, everybody does. That was a big media event for sure, surprisingly.
You said that your experience in Kyrgyzstan is part of the reason you decided to try that El Capitan climb?
Yeah. What I was saying is this quest to figure out the limits of human capability. I mean, I've been constantly identifying things in this world of rock climbing, which is what I do, that will push me as hard as I can imagine. And I've for the last 20 years, I've just come up with one after another and after another. I've gone to Patagonia, I've gone all over the world, but my real venue has been El Capitan. And I've climbed a lot of routes up there, but I eventually got to the place where I was looking for something bigger, something that would push me harder, something that would answer those questions. And so that's what the Dawn Wall became. And it's turned into a 7-year quest.
Help us understand this a little more. It sounds like you're saying you in some way wanted to get back to some part of the feeling you had pushing a guy off a cliff and saving your life. I mean, that sounds kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's not the fear. It's not the fact that I killed somebody. It's more that coming to life when you physically think that you should be completely used up. It's that limits of human capability. It's the really more the physical side of that. I think, you know, if you understand that if you change your idea of what you're capable of, if you move that bar, 10 steps out, life becomes a lot less scary. And so it's a very empowering thing.
Okay. You're capable of a lot more than you knew, that feeling, kind of feeling you talked about?
Yeah, Kyrgyzstan taught me that. And then, the Dawn Wall was supposed to be an exploration of that, I would say.
But here's what worries me a little. We've just met, but do you feel addicted to that kind of danger or exhaustion?
Yeah. So my
Because that's worrisome.
I mean, my book dives very deeply into this idea of risk and how far should we push it. You know, I'm a father now. I have a lot of people that I need to be alive for. And so I talk a lot about going on one climbing trip after another and doing progressively more dangerous things. And yeah, so at times I have definitely felt addicted to it. For me, the Dawn Wall, though, was, I became so obsessed by that one because to me it represented this perfect balance. It was this huge big goal. It was incredibly emotionally appealing. It was challenging, but I was relatively certain I was going to live through it. Like, it's not actually that dangerous. There's no big avalanches that can come and wipe you off the mountain. It's a clean rock face. It feels exciting when you're up there, but you're tied into ropes, and if you fall a long ways, they catch you. And so,
oh, well, then so wasn't that big a deal after all?
The challenge was a big deal, but the danger wasn't. And I think
it looked
that's,
like the kind of face only Spider-Man is. That's what I remember about. Like, how's any human being?
Yeah.
I know you have something to catch you, but how's that even possible to do that?
Right. So it's, I mean, the intriguing part of the climb is not only taking an environment that looks impossible and looks scary and making it manageable, but it's also the athletic quest. It's trying to pick this goal that is above you and then rise your abilities to match that.
But how is that drive to push yourself, or addiction to push yourself to your own limits, how is that a sustainable way to live?
I think that you can challenge yourself always. I mean, writing this book for me was an understanding that I maybe shouldn't push the risk side, and I'm not going to always be able to push the physical side, but you could just change the venue. You can do it mentally. I mean, writing a book was something that I knew very little about, but I got obsessed by it, and I gathered the knowledge. I approached it like I do a big mountain. I got the right people on the bus with me. I came up with a good partner, and we sat down, and we got very, very excited about making the story as good as we could.
Are you saying there is a message in the kind of stuff you've been through, a message for the rest of us?
Yeah, I think that this idea of adventure is, people think about it differently, but I consider it simply embracing the unknown. And I think that that doing that creates flow, which has a way of bringing incredible balance and energy to life. The people who are seeking this flow state are some of the most fulfilled people in the world. And you can do that through rock climbing. You can do that through really anything. You just need to be pushing yourself and become very excited about what it is that you're doing.
Tommy Caldwell's new book is called The Push, A Climber's Journey of Endurance, Risk, and Going Beyond Limits. And you heard that story right here on listener-supported KUOW Seattle.